Good morning. I know it's a little cloudy out, but we'll make it a good morning in our hearts and our minds, and the sun will come. Welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. My name is Christina Clack, and I will be your presider today. Prairie is both an open-hearted and an open-minded congregation, and we welcome everyone. Today, the services at Prairie are led by our minister or by members of our congregation or by members from the wider community. And today, we're very happy to welcome Jody Weldon. And I'm going to go ahead and announce her now. Jody is a retired board-certified chaplain. She's done hospital chaplaincy for about 14 years. She served here at Prairie for 1 year as our consulting minister in 2005 and 2006, for those of you who were here back then. Jody practiced as a Wisconsin State licensed psychotherapist for 17 years. She now speaks and leads workshops on the spirituality of illness and spiritual courage in the 21st century, body, heart, and consciousness. Jody is also an author. She's working on a mystery called High Tide, and you can follow that on www.jodyweldon.com. We do have a table in the lobby with her materials, including a fiction book on peaceful dying. So check that out. It's right in front of the coat hanging area. Orange will read our opening words.
The opening words today are actually a chant that we've done at Prairie, but I'm going to read them rather than chant them. So. Beauty is before me and beauty is behind me. Above me and below me hovers the beautiful. I am surrounded by it. I am immersed in it. In my youth, I am aware of it. And in old age, I shall walk quietly the beautiful trail. In beauty, it is begun. In beauty, it is ended.
I would like to welcome up Rosemary Lester for our chalice lighting this morning.
Just so you're not surprised, Penny asked me to do the reading in both English as well as in German. So, well, that's okay. We live in a time of science. We try very hard to understand the world around us and think that by doing so, we can solve the miracle at the root of our existence. As humanity reaches out for the farthest stars, should we not reach out as well for something very near and still in our life, often farther than the farthest speck on the firmament, to the heart of our fellow human beings? The flame we are lighting now shall be a beacon in the darkness that separates us. It shall not only help us in uniting Unitarian Universalists across the world, but strengthen the treasured, miraculous bond between all people that exists since the beginning of time. And the writer was Andreas Bolhard Nordenkampf of the Unitarian Universalist Forum in Austria. And now the German. Wir leben in einer Zeit der Wissenschaft. Wir versuchen angestrengt, die Welt um uns herum zu verstehen und so das Rätsel an der Wurzel unserer Existenz zu lösen. Jetzt, wo die Menschheit nach den fernsten Sternen greift, sollten wir da nicht auch nach etwas greifen, das uns so nahe scheint und doch in unserem Leben oft ferner ist als der fernste Fleck am Firmament? Nach den Herzen unserer Mitmenschen? Die Flamme, die wir nun entzünden, soll uns ein Leuchtfeuer sein in der Dunkelheit, die uns trennt. Es soll uns nicht nur unterstützen in der weltweiten Vereinigung der Unitarier und Universalisten, sondern das wertvolle, wundervolle Band stärken, das alle Menschen von jeher verbindet.
Thank you, Rosemary. Now Jody will lead us in our meditation.
It's so fun to be here. I have to arrange all these things because otherwise I'll get them all mixed up. I can't talk and do at the same time very easily. All right, good morning. It's lovely to see all my old friends and to see meet all these new people. It's just great to be here. This place feels wonderful. And you know, it's the reason, and your service is the result of so many years of refining a program to run so beautifully, so that's a joy. I asked if I might lead the meditation this morning. I know you traditionally do a silent meditation, so it won't be complex, but I love to lead the meditation. So. So let us get comfortable with our bodies, knowing that one of the sacred beauties of being in community is being in silence and stillness and preparing ourselves for our time together by feeling our hearts and remembering that in each of us are the seeds for the future. Sorry, there's a wax in there or something. I don't know what that was. In the days after 9/11, I was a ministerial intern at the Olympia Brown UU Church in Racine. I drove to the church going east on I-94 towards Milwaukee with Lake Michigan in front of me, as yet unseen. I made the 90-degree angle turn south onto I-894 to make the square box drive around the city. And then quickly I turned east again on I-43 and soon I turned south back on I-94 for the rest of the drive to Racine. Now the lake was on my left. I tracked its presence and it was ever in my consciousness as I made my way to the church. That Sunday was filled with emotion, fears, hopes, and most importantly, community, the community of that congregation. The lake had helped me prepare. Water is my true north as far as natural elements go. I was brought up on a small lake in eastern New York State. I visited the Atlantic Ocean in the summers. I look at Lake Monona from my second floor home in Madison. Bodies of water help me relax. The deep wisdom and presence of a body of water literally feeds me. The deep wisdom and presence of every body of water that I pass is something I'm aware of and I pay attention to. Lake Michigan fed me as I drove that day, even if I couldn't see it. Those were the days when the feeling that the world was in chaos had just begun. And we all said, like a mantra, through our shock, the phrase, "Everything has changed. Everything has changed." I know we all remember that, lived through it, remember that. The towers were gone, and we kept saying, "Everything has changed." That phrase was like the one thing we could hold on to, since we couldn't make any other sense of it all. Airports were empty, roads were empty, we stayed close to home. At the very least, we could register our shock and confusion by agreeing, "Everything has changed." But in the face of that constant sentiment, within a week of 9/11, I began to hear a different message. It came to me like a mantra. Also, it echoed in my ear. It was, "Nothing has changed. Nothing has changed." It was a private message to me from a source I could not name. My own intuition, divine guidance, It could have been either. I accept the divine mystery as unfathomable, and I'm willing to acknowledge it when things happen that I can't explain. It was like I had an angel sitting on my right shoulder, repeating that phrase over and over, my own personal daily mantra. It wasn't something I thought up, it just kept coming to me. Nothing has changed. I believe that intuition or divine messaging was trying to tell me something. Nothing has changed, but what did that mean? It was so clear that everything had changed. I kept it to myself and pondered it for many years. Finally, I figured out what it meant. I believe that that phrase, nothing has changed, applies to the natural and mystical laws which have been in operation for millennium and will be in operation for millennium. And they were in operation on that day of 9/11. They are the invisible choreography which actually rule our lives and life in the universe. They cannot be breached. They can only be embraced and lived. For instance, even when people thought the world was flat, it was round. And people's lives were affected by it. If nothing as simple as the sun set and rose every day, because of the rotation of the round globe, planet, around the sun. 9/11 was startling, and truly it was a natural effect of how we had been living in the laws which we either did not know or did not feel we had to honor. The laws include natural laws and mystical laws. The resulting problem chaos, quote unquote problem chaos, is really a healthy chaos which calls us to the next huge evolutionary step for the Earth. Think of when you move to a new home. Everything is in chaos. But you know it's a good chaos, as soon you will have a new home. And so it is with our world now. We are called to action as groups and also as individuals to embrace these laws we have dismissed or been ignorant about, to embrace them and apply them in how we use our bodies, hearts, and consciousness into the future. So, of course, both the natural laws and the mystical laws need to be identified. I can give some examples today. The natural laws are things like the ecosystems. The ecosystems are set up in a delicate balance of interdependence. If you damage the ecosystem, you put the whole system in jeopardy. There are natural laws we are still discovering, like the quote-unquote, the new physics, which Bruce Lipton, cell biologist, defines as, quote, a modern version of ancient spirituality. In a universe made out of energy, everything is entangled. Everything is one. Futurist economist Hazel Henderson, in her paper, The Global Transition to the Solar Age from the Fossil Fuel Age, calls for the new sustainable and green economies to be designed after the lessons of nature. This is a field known as biomimicry. In order to live with nature, and not in domination, or not to pretend we can dominate or control it, we must work to mimic it in our ways of joining with it to move forward in harmony. Hazel makes clear that things like the old survival of the fittest, the old growth-driven economies, are things of the past. Economic policies must be multidisciplinary and in accord with nature. She maps what is happening around the globe. It is actually heartening, even as we know the United States is way behind in so many of these innovations. Secondly, the mystical laws. They are well defined by energy medicine, medical intuit, and spiritual teacher Carolyn Mace. Carolyn Mace specializes in the individual spiritual journey. She defines the mystical laws. And there are many models for mystical laws. I like hers, so I'm going to share it with you this morning. I think they're pretty close. She defines the mystical laws which must be embraced and understood in daily living as individuals live their lives. First, that there is only the now. This is a great teaching of the ancient Hindu religions, still being taught today. The necessity of forgiveness, the great teaching of the Christian religion. All is an illusion, the message Buddha brings to us. Trust in the divine paradox, irony, and synchronicity. The humanists, the day-to-day life of the human being, tell us these lessons all the time. And finally, maintain spiritual congruence, that what is going on inside of us, we work with, we confront, we listen to the truth, and like the sailors, we fly the Pegasus away if we need to. We maintain spiritual congruence from the inside of us out into the world. Mace also gives us an historical analysis of why we are in this time of chaos. She starts with suggesting that the Age of Enlightenment was actually an age of darkness. With all its positive effects, science, revolutions, the liberal movement, to name a few, it was basically based on a separation of humanity from nature, dominating nature rather than cooperating with it. Science and the human being were the patriarchal kings. It was an age of arrogance and war. Everything spiritual or divine or based on body wisdom got drummed out of the advanced thinking. Mace goes on, by the time we got to World War II, humanity was still war-oriented. World War II laid out a clear picture of who were the good guys and who were the bad guys. We were part of the good guys in America. And synchronistically, the nuclear age was upon us. We were bound to split the atom. A time had come, and its uses could have been brought into society peacefully. But since we were still warlike as a human race, and we were ending a war, we brought the nuclear age in with a bomb. The nuclear bomb dropped on Japan, but really it dropped on us all. Identifying the good guys and the bad guys began to be much more murky. Ever since, we have been chasing the fire, the nuclear energy. Who has it? How do we get it? How do we stop others from getting it? It has determined everything. It has given rise to spying, wars for power and control, dominance, growth of wealth, and no human values being added as a people grow their wealth. Terrorists, barbarians, pirates have reemerged, and other dynamics are all about chasing the fire of the bomb and living with the thought that we could be killed any day by it. And so humanity has evolved into a short-term approach to life. Fast food, fast relationships, whatever, attitudes, valuing destructive movies, images of guns and violence dominate our culture. She finishes by saying we are survival paranoid and we live our lives that way. Bruce Lipton, who I mentioned earlier, is the author of Biology of Belief. He's a cell biologist. He once was a professor of anatomy at the UW. Sums up our situation and what it will take to turn things. Quote, at the moment, we're witnessing the dissemble of the structures that people once considered solid, including religious, political, economic, and political ones, because they are locked into old and flawed systems. I believe they need to collapse so we can move beyond their limiting beliefs, like the I beat you before you beat me attitude, like survival of the fittest, or the belief that humans are the result of random mutations, or the notion that genes control our lives. They've recently discovered genes can be affected and changed. All of these outdated beliefs we have been laboring under for 150 years. He goes on to say, I sit here looking at the crises facing humanity, and I'm excited because I believe they are a sign that we are on the way to the next level of evolution, a new belief system that can shape a civilization based on harmony and self-empowerment. He uses the wonderful metaphor of the caterpillar that eats and eats and eats till it's just overly fed, collapses on the leaf, and all of a sudden begins to change into that chrysalis. And as the change takes place, the chrysalis forms, and then inside the chrysalis, everything begins to change. Think of all those little cells in there that are used to digesting food. All of a sudden, they haven't got a job. What's going on? What's happening? Most of what the work that needed to be done isn't being done anymore. Everything begins to go into soup, except for a few cells, the imaginal cells. The imaginal cells have been in that caterpillar all along, and they are awake. They're thinking, oh, okay, and they begin to operate. They kind of find each other. They begin to do some things. They don't know what they're doing, but they're at work. They know their turn has come. Their job has come. And they continue to create and work. And so you're either an imaginal cell or you're the soup. And eventually the imaginal cells are creating the butterfly. And they don't even know what's going to happen. When is the butterfly going to show up? They don't know. But eventually the moment comes naturally as part of the whole flow. The butterfly emerges from the chrysalis, rests on the leaf, dries out, and within a few hours flies away, transformed. This is a metaphor I hope we can keep in mind. Yeah, a lot is going into soup. And we are the imaginal cells. We are what will make the difference as we grow together. It will take spiritual courage. It will take work through your heart, through your body, through your consciousness, and through your mind. All of these things can be moved and transformed. The human heart holds the key to the story of the future. You either listen to your heart and follow it, or you ignore it. It gets more complicated, but that's the essence, really. The body, do you pay attention to your body? Do you stay in your body? Do you know how to feel yourself and get centered? Turn your criticalness into curiosity. Lots of things there. Consciousness. Consciousness is how to find that peaceful, still place in you and operate in the world powerfully from that place. Eckhart Tolle talks about when you go to a social justice event, you bring facts, you bring that story. Wasn't that heart-wrenching about the deaf people? You bring a story, and you bring your presence, your capacity to embody stillness and peace even as you deliver the facts. That will have more impact than you, any ranting or raving. And the mind, you begin to use your mind differently. This seems wrong, that seems wrong. How about this question you can play with? What could be right, but what about what appears to be wrong? What could be right about what appears to be wrong? This would be the question that I was bringing in a way to 9/11. Carolyn May says that our times are similar to Jamestown, Virginia, in the 1600s. The settlers had reached this new world that they were looking for, but it was rough and rugged, and there was no honey in the streets. There were not even streets. Over 80% of the colonists perished in 1609 to 1610. The settlers did not live to see the American Revolution, but they were there in Jamestown, living their vision with faith, probably knowing that they would not see the end results. Bruce Lipton makes a call to all of us. It spoke to me when I read it. During this time of chaos, I advise you to avoid the temptation of isolating yourself, allowing your biological drive for protection to trump your biological drive for growth. This is a time for growth, not walling yourself off. By all means, take steps to protect yourself, but don't stop at protection. Reaching out to others will help bring about the changes we need. And so it is with our point in time. We may not see the end result. I know I won't. But 100 years from now, people could look back and say, look what they lived through to make our world possible. We can choose to step into our courage through our heart, body, and consciousness, be an imaginal cell. The possibilities are deep in your spiritual DNA. Like the bodies of water that I love, the lakes, the rivers, the oceans, which take care of me even when I am not aware of them. The possibilities are there, embedded in us. We need only turn to them to use them, to activate them, to bring them to renew our lives through the future we want. I invite you to listen to Louisa May Alcott, a universalist and author, who wrote the famous book Little Women. "I am not scared of a storm," she said. "I am learning how to sail my ship." I'll make up what I think she meant.
Okay.
Because I can't quite remember that piece. But she meant that you can trust whatever it is that's in you that's trying to be born. Whatever consciousness, whatever you're thinking about, whatever is moving in you that keeps wanting to come forward. Or if you think you should be getting a job and you're just not getting a job, maybe there's something else that's trying to be born. Trust yourself.
Okay. Process.
Yeah, no, this is a good point. I meant to say earlier, these are controversial people, most everyone I talked about. So definitely he's very much not, the traditional science does not accept his work. Gary's talking about the movement in business today that we know now that if we just do business on the basis of growth, we lose the human values, and that has to change now in order to reflect the green issues of the globe. There's huge movements among business. There's a conference coming up in May here in Madison about consciousness in business. What do we have to do to integrate human values as we move into growth? I just feel like it's all part of what we need to get out and talk about and move around and think about what does it mean for us and as a group. So I think there's absolutely in congregation and community we want to be kind and we need to speak our truth. So that's good for me. All right, thank you. And now, as we leave each other, as we leave with the blessing of each other in our hearts, may you find yourself on that road which allows you to give what you most need to give and to receive what you most need to receive. Please greet your neighbor.